Hello and welcome to the AFET Comics Podcast, episode 146. Guess what, fans? We are even closer to 200, but not quite 50%.
It's right there.
When we have episode 151, I'm just going to go off. Anyway, my name is David Brooke. This is the AFET Comics Podcast. I'm here with Nathan Simmons. We're here to talk about comic books.
Yeah, we thought we'd try comic books this week.
Now, not just comic books. We're talking about the latest and greatest comic books. We're talking about the latest and greatest news. We're having the latest and greatest guests on. Later in the show, Ron V is going to join us to talk about Swamp Thing. Not only the future of Swamp Thing, but the first season of Swamp Thing.
Guys, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on the show before. I love Swamp Thing. This is a very cool day for me.
I do start the interview by mentioning you.
Unfortunately,
Nathan hasn't heard it yet.
I wasn't able to be there, unfortunately, because of
timing didn't work out.
But I am so thrilled that Ron was able to lend us some time and talk about all things Muckman.
And you came up with pretty much almost all the questions for the interview. So, you know, in a sense, you were there in spirit.
In spirit, yeah. I was there through the green. Reaching out.
I did have a plant on my desk at the time, and it kept like turning towards me.
That was me.
And
that was me.
I knew it. Yeah. I knew it.
You're my John Constantine.
Well, I didn't know it until just now. Well, if this is your first time listening, we always start with the news, the biggest news of the week, as deemed by us kings of comics.
Sure. let's dial it back a bit, Dave. But you know, archdukes at best.
Archdukes.
One,
of comics,
two,
yes.
Princes kneel before you.
So in the top bit of news, it's got to be the top bit because I think this never happens.
No.
Image Comics workers came out and they formed a union called Comic Book Workers United. They announced it on Twitter and then linked to a webpage where you could read their goals and more finer print kind of information. Mm-hmm. It took the Twitterverse by storm. If you're at all involved with comics Twitter, many creators were jumping in on the replies saying, this is great, can't wait. More of this, please, et cetera, et cetera.
And the thread was really exceptional. I mean, they said, you know, they love what they do. They love working with creators and making stuff for readers. And they said, sadly, we have also watched that same labor be taken for granted at best and exploited at worst. Keeping our heads above water was the new normal before the pandemic. And since its onset, we've been expected to take on even larger workloads with fewer resources. They basically want to make sure that they're not overtaxed and undervalued, as they put it. And I think that that's awesome. I think that's also very much in line with, you know, the ethos behind Image Comics.
Totally, yeah. I mean, it was creator owned and created.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, unions do not exist in the comics industry at all.
Right.
Every single creator is a freelancer.
Yeah.
Which actually I learned this week, if you're a freelancer, you're like legally not allowed to start a union or something. There's some weird loophole thing, only in America, of course.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who worked enough retail jobs that made them like take classes to try to explain to me why unions are bad and still left being like, I don't know. I think it's cool that people are paid a fair wage and taken care of.
Right, exactly. So this is, and again, this to make it clear, this union is only for the Image Comics people working in like the office setting, not necessarily the creators. Although they do say in their statement, it's for all comics.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if people start to take the cue from this, especially, you know, we'll see how it turns out because, you know, as of right now, Image hasn't voluntarily recognized the union.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So on Friday, Image Comics came out and said they are not voluntarily recognizing it. Basically, they want it. They're forcing them to have to go through a different process to become an official union, right?
Right. Yeah. They have to go through like this arbitration process, and basically they're putting it up to a vote, more or less, with the petition with the National Labor Relations Board. So there's a lot that's going to have to happen before this goes through.
And it's going to cost them money.
It's going to cost money. But I'm hoping, you know, this could be a turning point for the industry. I mean, we'll see.
Right. Yeah. If this could, yeah, exactly. It could be the small little snowball that starts to roll down the hill and then become something bigger.
Right.
I mean, you know, you and I being so close to comics and the comics news and comics creators, we've seen for years creators going on Twitter and voicing their concerns about the way pay works, the way they don't can't afford healthcare. I myself have donated money to causes where creators needed to get a heart transplant or some other health. They couldn't afford their own health costs.
In his last
and
days,
so had to go to the internet Antlo's for it.
Family was kickstarting, you know, his treatments and everything. I mean, like that, it happens. It happens more often than you would think for people who are legends in this field.
And also, like, at this stage, this union is only 10 of 12 eligible staff members.
Right.
It's very tiny.
Right.
And it is kind of discouraging that Image wouldn't agree to allow these 10 people to form this.
Right.
But, you know, living in a capitalist society as we are, we know that corporations are very against these kind of things because it means, like you said, having to pay people a fair wage or give them benefits that, you know, they deserve, but don't necessarily want to pay for.
Right.
So yeah, we'll be definitely keeping up with this to see how it's going. Obviously we're going to learn more as the actual official like voting goes on, and this union isn't going to stop anytime soon, I don't think. So
yeah, I think they're going to keep pushing and fighting for this. And I'm interested to see how this develops and who else, you know, helps lead the charge.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Speaking of leading the charge, Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sonnantino were teasing the heck out of the Bone Orchard mythos last Sunday on Halloween. Then on Friday, Lemire on his Substack, a free Substack email, I should add, basically detailed what their plan is for this Bone Orchard mythos for 2022, which is a shared horror universe written only by Lemire.
Yeah.
I think that's important, and then only drawn by Sorrentino. And the plan is to have hardcover graphic novels come out, as well as series through Image Comics, at different times, with basically three graphic novels planned by 2023.
To basically kind of bookend this mini series that'll flesh out the world, and yeah, this is really cool. Mm-hmm. He's got a long-term plan, at least for the next 2 or 3 years. To build out this new universe,
which is I'm so happy that it's not just Substack material. Although, I wouldn't be surprised if you're subscribed to Lemire's Substack. He is doing a lot of like process creation and showing you how it's made. I'm sure we'll get that kind of stuff with this, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a short story that's tied to this.
Sure,
but it is really neat to see like. Sort of like in the similar vein of Joe Hill's Hill House comics, this bigger idea of multiple stories coming together is really neat.
Well, and it's funny because like, you know, at first when I was reading this, I was like, God, that is a lot. That's a lot to come out of the gate with saying these are the things that are coming out. Here's two graphic novels that I've named, like that got planned already, plus like 6 to 8 issues in between. And then I remembered it's Jeff Lemire saying it, who doesn't slow down and like has like 6 books on the shelves at any given time. So I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I know. You know, and then the other side of it, it made me immediately think Andrea Sorrentino, who's currently doing Batman the Impostor at DC,
which looks will probably so be good.
And he's done some Marvel work here and there the last couple of years. He's probably going to be 100% on this project.
Yes. Yeah. I think so.
One other thing to point out, if you do like Andrea and Jeff's Gideon Falls and Primordial, they are not part of this universe at all. It's its own thing. And you know, the first thought I had when he made that very clear was how much you want to... Well, we already know Gideon Falls is being turned into a TV show.
Uh-huh.
Primordial probably is some sort of development in a TV or movie, right, at this point. So... God, no, don't link that up with our big mythos because that's more IP we can sell,
right?
Not that I'm not trying to say he's selfish or anything like that.
No,
I'm
just saying, get it.
Like it's pretty
diversify,
smart.
Diversify, build your own little worlds and stuff, and then figure out what to do with them. Absolutely.
Right. Speaking of building little worlds, Devil's Reign is coming out.
Yeah, the little world of the devil.
You know, Chip Zdarsky, who's writing the main series, he was on Word Balloon this week, and he was sort of saying like he doesn't give a shit about this stuff. He's not thinking about, you know, Daredevil 10 years from now.
Yeah.
He's just doing his stories, filing them away, keeps working,
telling the crazy story now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a big event that's starting this year, but it's bleeding into the February 2022. Yeah. And Marvel per usual, is giving us early solicit information throughout the month. And this week we got info about the upcoming Moon Knight tie-in to Devil's Reign, Spider-Man, X-Men.
Yeah.
And then actually we had the exclusive for the Superior Four, the Zach Thompson written Doc Ock 3-issue mini tie-in event.
Yes.
Or story, I should call it. Which looks to me like, what if Doc Ock assumed the mind of Wolverine, Hulk, and Ghost Rider in alternate universes, similar to how he assumed the mind of Spider-Man?
It looks pretty wild.
Kingpin has secrets on all the heroes, right?
Yeah.
And he's going to reveal them and ruin their lives or some baloney, and then they're going to stop him, I guess?
I hope they do. Look, all I care about is the fact that Dazzler is front and center on the cover of Devil's Reign X-Men number 2. Like, that's my priority.
Guys, you don't know this about Nathan, but whenever I'm like, hey, do you want to go to this restaurant? He's like, is Dazzler
going to be
at all involved?
And also, you live on the other side of the country.
Oh, that's a dream I had. That's right. Sorry. So yeah, the event starts in December with Devil's Reign number 1, number 2, Spider-Woman number 18, Luke Cage, City of Fire number 1.
I'm looking forward to this. December. Like, this is the kind of, like, it's a good mix of, like, street-level action and intrigue, but with some really big, wild ideas. I'm really looking forward to this one.
It has been a long time since Marvel had an event that was street-level. Like,
yeah.
I swear, they've had, like, four back-to-back
Heroes Reborn were, and those were the ones that really, that was the stuff that really worked for me. Like, I enjoyed, like, the Luke Cage stuff and that kind of stuff like that. But the, this one, I'm getting, like, real Shadowlands vibes with, like, some weird alternate reality kind of things thrown in. It's kind of hard to tell exactly what shape this will take, but it's all big swings, and I'm a fan of big swings.
You know, it also has a big swing. Clocks.
kind of. Yeah, that one wasn't bad. That was not the worst.
Because, you know, clocks have a big swing of a
little
arm.
Guy. Anyway. Yeah.
Marvel Comics also released Timeless teasers. What's a Timeless teaser, Dave? Well, Timeless is a new one-shot coming out by Jed MacKay, Kev Walker, Greg Land, and Mark Bagley that supposedly will show us the future or possible futures of Marvel Comics characters. And in these teasers, we get a little bit of info on Thanos, Doctor Doom, Anatoly Petrov, everyone's favorite character.
And Kang the Conqueror,
Entropy.
Of course.
And Kang, of course, yes. But yeah, so AIPT actually had one of the exclusive reveals of this, which was pretty cool of Marvel to send us. But for Thanos, for instance, it's a clock with him on the face of the clock, and there's text above it that says, "What weapon will Thanos wield to threaten the future of the Marvel Universe?" And in the picture, he's holding a Mjolnir, but it's also got the Infinity Stones built into it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then meanwhile, IGN revealed that Miss Minutes is going to be making her Marvel canon debut.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's crazy, right? From people were losing their minds over that news.
I love it.
They're like, what's happening? It's such a no-brainer, though. Miss Minutes, the design of Miss Minutes is so good.
So good. And I immediately, like, look at any image of her and think of Tara Strong's voice. So it makes me happy. Yeah.
Also, like, I remember when everybody was, like, was very interested in the Loki show.
Yeah.
I think one of the directors or writers was like, Miss Minutes is a hugely important character to this story. Yeah. But if you finish the first season, they're not that big yet. So
yeah.
They may be hugely important in season 2, which we know is already underway.
Yeah.
But do you know what else is underway?
Eternal Warriors Scorched Earth?
That's correct. Valiant Entertainment they started the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Their first ever Kickstarter, by the way.
Yeah.
For Eternal Warrior and OGN's coming out. And they met their goal in a day and surpassed the $25,000 goal and just keep on carrying on. So this is another major publisher after Boom Studios last year.
Yeah.
Made $1.4 million on Berserker.
That's right. Yeah.
If you ever say.
I never get tired of you saying Berserker.
If you ever even have a hint of a vowel in that, Keanu Reeves will come to your house and punch you in the face.
I love it though. There's different tiers and stuff though, so you get different extras and goodies. Like exclusive hardcover. You can get drawn into the comic. You can get a set of retailer variants. So they've got stuff in here that's like makes it worth pledging, I think.
Yeah, and it's a 100+ page graphic novel. So it's not like an epic collection, but it's lengthy enough to make it worth your while. And it's cool to see Eternal Warrior back because, you know, Valiant's been slowly unveiling their characters in this soft reboot, I'd call it.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen Eternal Warrior yet.
And this Alberto Tarasido art is gorgeous. Like, this looks really cool.
It does look really cool. Do you know what else is really cool? The Inkle.
Taika Waititi.
The Inkle, the classic 1980s sci-fi by Jodorowsky and Moebius.
Yeah.
Has got a director and writer with Taika Waititi. He will be directing and co-writing with his buddy.
Yeah.
I forget his name.
Jermaine
Clement.
Yeah. Yes. From Flight of the
Conchords.
Everyone's
favorite guy from Flight of the Conchords.
I will
so
say, one of the things that I appreciated was anytime this news got picked up, like this news was all over the place when it came out, like yesterday or the day before. And like, I feel like almost every headline only mentioned Alejandro Jodorowsky instead of it, like, did not mean no, like, no one was talking about Moebius, which is like,
right?
Like, and I don't mean to like downplay Jodorowsky's inputs, but like,
no,
Moebius is 90% of the magic. Like, that's the visual that makes you say, fuck, this needs to be on screen.
Totally.
And I'm interested. I mean, Waititi to me hasn't made a bad movie yet. I think he's got a really interesting outlook on things. But I, you know, we'll see how this turns out.
This could be huge for Humanoids, right? Like, they've got other Jodorowsky titles like Metabarons and Megalex,
right?
That are all kind of part of this larger sci-fi universe. That could become the next Marvel.
Probably not,
but it could. It's worth noting that Taika, he's actually attached to like 7 projects right now.
Oh yeah, he's also...
including a Star Wars one.
Yes, and he's supposedly still working on trying to make an Akira film, which I don't know if it'll ever happen at this point. Like, it's just so...
Yeah.
How do you bring that to live action, and why? Why do you bring that to live action?
Let me explain. First, you get Leonardo DiCaprio to be the star.
I remember when that was like the thing. That script leaked online. I've read it. It's hilarious.
Bad.
Oh, so bad. It's so bad.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
It would be a very dumb move to have him be the star, let me just say.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Don't do it.
Just don't do it.
Hey, then I'm
it.
Telling you, don't do
I
it.
I won't do it. I'll. Okay. You've talked me out of it. I know it was gonna be my thing.
Oh god, it was. You were gonna have your name all plastered on it. It's gonna be amazing. Also plastered, not on it, is Fox and the Hare, which has shifted its release date due to COVID-related delays. I just want to bring this up because it kind of came out of nowhere. It was supposed to come out in November, but it's now set to release in February.
Right.
I wonder what COVID-related could mean. It could mean maybe one of the creators was sick or something.
It also could just make, you know, working from home or working under different circumstances. I mean, it is a little vague, but, you know, everybody's dealing with some kind of COVID setback.
And then our last bit of news. We already kind of knew this, but The Swamp Thing is continuing on with a second season. Ron B. revealed that, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But DC officially said it on their accounts this week. And the solicit came out I saw a lot of comics retailers or stores coming out on Twitter and being like, yes, finally, we got the actual confirmation. Because they got stuff sent to them directly.
Gotta say, as a longtime fan of Swamp Thing, the cover for issue 11 has me flipping out.
Are you speaking of the one where his head is in someone's hand?
Yeah, who appears to be Tefe Holland or some other character maybe that we haven't met yet. I mean, again, maybe you guys get into this in the interview, but I'm very excited.
Yeah, Rom talked a little bit about issue 10, further explaining the philosophical conflict of his like main story.
Yeah.
And making that very clear. He didn't get into beyond that really, but we do dig into like the themes and stuff.
For sure, but I love it. There's so many I'll get into this a little bit later, but there's so many just incredible layers to this story.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to hearing that interview as much as I know our listeners are. Yeah.
If you look at the exclusive preview on AMPT, also, yeah. like, there's a lot of Brotherhood stuff going on in this 10th issue.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's so intriguing to me gorgeous. As well.
The shot of him, like, melting while he's holding the bomb. And, yeah, this book looks so good.
So good. It's an instant classic. Spencer's a
genius. Spicer's colors are unbelievable, too. Like, I love this book.
I do. I really do. Do you know what else I love?
What's that?
Is our standout
Kapow!
Moment of the week.
Hell yeah. Our yeah. favorite moment of the week. Beyond just our favorite comics.
Yes.
That one moment that got us tickled with delight.
Yeah.
If we're it still didn't giggling. Tickle us with delight. If it didn't tickle us with delight, we apologize.
Yeah.
We will make ourselves more available next week to talk about Kapow. Anyway, let me talk about my favorite moment of the week.
Yeah.
It's from Batman Superman Authority Special Number 1 by Philip Kennedy Johnson, Trevor Hairston, and Ben Temple Smith. So I didn't know this until I started writing the review for AIPT. Batman and Midnighter have never actually met in the flesh in any comic book ever. They've spoken about right. each other.
Yeah, Midnighter's usually hanging out right. with Dick
and
Grayson.
And on top of that, of course, Midnighter, if you don't know, is basically supposed to be Batman from another universe.
Yeah, created to be the Wildstorm.
And then Wildstorm got bought by DC, et cetera, and now they're in the same universe. Well, right. in this issue,
right.
We finally get them to see them both in the same room and comment on each other's whole deal. And there's a page where Midnighter is fighting some baddies. Batman's not actually in the room at this point, but he's kind of commenting on what he has that Batman doesn't, and the whole scene is really good because he like kind of makes fun of Batman in a sense, like he's just a guy with calcified
yeah.
joints or whatever. But in this right. scene, he's fighting a bad guy that he should be actually like struggling with, but he's actually just kind of chatting to himself while beating their ass. And he's like basically like Batman's so overrated. Much. I've got the neural enhancements, the AI, the accelerated healing, the dark door tech. My whole vibe is way more hardcore. I don't think that's up for debate. He can't even be bothered to kill anybody. Yeah. Like that's what he's saying. And then he gets punched in the back, probably because he's just focusing way too much on Batman at the moment. But it's a great scene.
I love it.
And I was surprised there wasn't more websites yeah. like making news out of this because it is it's kind of a big deal that they've met for the in the flesh.
And he's yeah. And there's a lot of like, especially in like Grayson and Batman and Robin Eternal, there's some really great bits of Midnighter just kind of just trashing the whole idea of Batman. Like, come on, I'm the hotter gay version. Like, why do
and
you,
he's not like, wrong is the best why part.
He's not. That's the best
thing. If you go yeah. to AIPTcomics.com and check out this podcast post, you could see that page that I'm talking about. But what is your favorite page, Nathan?
I loved a page from the Me You Love in the Dark by Scotty Young and Jorge Corona. This has been such an interesting little series with, about an artist who is in isolation mm-hmm. and having trying in need of a breakthrough. And then this issue reveals the darker side of her spectral companion that's yeah. been keeping her company and serving as her muse. And the final page here is her, or one of the final pages, so spoilers, is her agent has come to the house and he realizes that something's wrong with her. So he's trying to get her to leave the house and she says, he won't let me. And that's when the room gets dark and you see the spirit or whatever it is bubbling in through the door, a zillion arms, a zillion eyes, teeth. It just looks like it can barely squeeze its way around every corner. It's like flooding into the room behind her agent. It is an incredible image. It's terrifying. And this book really sneaks up on you with those moments. We've got one more issue to go. I can't wait to see how this it all ties up, but they're telling this really incredible story that feels like it's touching on elements of domestic
abuse. I was surprised by that,
and in a supernatural way, like in a way that's not fully literal, but I love this miniseries. It's been one of the highlights of my year, like checking in on Ro and seeing how she's for a while she was doing a lot better. Now things are getting rough. So I hope things turn out well for her. But like this page.
She needs to get out. Drop. She needs to get out now. But she's too entwined with this beast, which is a metaphor for sure for like domestic abuse and
isolation and
it just feels so original and fresh. And I just hope Scotty Young and Jorge Corona don't stop working together.
Yeah, this is a great pairing, absolutely.
Talking about great pairings, in our next segment, Top Books of the Week, we're going to talk about our two top two favorite comic pairings, sort of.
Oh, eh? Damn. You are crushing with the segues
Of today. The week. So yeah, we're going to talk about our first, we're going to talk about our second favorite book of the week. I'll go first. Dark Knights of Steel, number one, by Tom Taylor and Yasmin Putri. This book completely shocked me. I love Tom Taylor in general. He's been doing a lot of alternate universe stuff. You know, and what's the Marvel one that he's doing right now that I completely lost memory of it?
Dark Ages.
Was delayed a whole year.
Yeah.
But I was going into this going, okay, here's another alternate universe thing where, you know, there are slight changes to characters and there are shocking moments. But this one felt wholly original in a lot of ways. It of course has some big beat moments that you're just like your jaw's on the floor, which is part of the joy of these kind of books because you can do anything you want.
Man, the last page of this book,
I did not see that coming.
Like genuinely, no. And you know what it is it this whole issue felt like, in the best possible way, a throwback to the old DC Elseworlds annuals.
Totally.
Like when they did like those 2 years where they did a bunch of different Elseworlds annuals. And it feels like that brought out to, you know, a larger scale and more, you know, having more time to really dig into characters and world building. And yeah, I really love this issue.
If you don't know about this series, it's basically a medieval DC Heroes set under the idea that Kal-El, Superman's parents, landed on Earth. Then he was given, he was born, and they became king and queen. And all of the familiar characters we know, like Harley Quinn and Green Arrow, are all involved in this universe as well. Batman basically is a knight, and he has squires that are all Robins. Like, there's a point where you're reading this book and you're like, all of this makes sense to me. Like, this book must have written itself on some level.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I totally agree. There's a couple moments here where I'm just like, well, duh, yeah, of course. Like this is like that's the best possible way to bring the Robins into this story. The book opens with like this traumatic narration that seems like a prophecy's being read, and then we cut to John Constantine having a seizure on the floor because he's being forced into making.
Yeah, that was really clever too.
Into using his second sight, like this book rules. Of course, people would think Black Lightning is a wizard. no one would trust the Green Man from space. You know,
but at the same time, Taylor
there's some he's really taking cool chances ideas too. Here.
There are. There's there's one major twist on a character by the end that you won't see coming, and it works within the narrative that's been built up around it. So totally check that out. But more importantly, what is your second favorite book of the week, Nathan?
Ah, man, I really loved The Swamp Thing, number 9 by Rom V.
This is weird because I've never seen this on your list before.
I know, I don't normally talk about Swamp Thing, but this issue... it's interesting. It's a lot of pulling the threads together for the, you know, the season one finale. So we're getting, you know, Jennifer Levi's friend has been taken by the Prescott company, who is basically they're trying to harness the power of the green by collecting the bodies of avatars and using the information that's contained in their cells to unlock, you know, the mysteries of the universe, essentially. It's huge, crazy sci-fi ideas, but it's very character-driven at the same time. You know, this whole series, we've seen Swamp Thing kind of trying to come to terms with his newfound powers, and he's, every time he transforms, it's like a werewolf. Like, it's something that happens to him. He doesn't want to become this thing. He's being kind of ripped away from flesh and turning into this, you know, this moss monster. And this is the first time, and it's acknowledged in the book, this is the first time that he's ever consciously decided, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to reach out into the green. I'm going to become the monster that I am because it's the right thing to do. Meanwhile, we're still exploring ideas of imperialism and capitalism and how it destroys lives and how, you know, the bottom dollar is more important than, you know, protecting the environment or other people, you know. This book is operating on so many different levels, and we still get, you know, crazy horror violence toward the end of it with an action sequence where a villain tears a group of soldiers limb from limb. And it's, you know, the panel layouts are insane. There's stuff done with flashbacks that is just so clever, where the different pieces that he's seeing across the world are all laid out within a grid that looks like it's on the back.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just visually gorgeous. And I am so happy that we're getting more issues of this.
Yeah, the story is clearly not done yet. And just the bigger story, the larger story about what Ram V is doing with Swamp Thing in general, it just feels so exciting too. And to take Levi, this character that wasn't Swamp Thing before, and everything hung on Alec being Swamp Thing so much so, which he talks about later.
Yeah.
So I'm stealing Ram V's idea that he shares later in the show. But like, yeah, so much of this, of Swamp Thing was about Alec, and he's been able to talk a little bit more about the green in a different way than, you know, say Scott Snyder did or whatever in his run.
Well, and we've gotten so used to the Swamp Thing as this almost infallible god, you know, this character that knows the ins and outs of how all of this works. And so it's the first time, and I love Alec Holland. This is a character that I've loved since I was a kid, and a concept I've loved since I was a kid. But the fact that we're seeing this version of Swamp Thing that has to still figure out what he's doing and isn't necessarily operating on he's still operating on human emotion, you know, he's reacting to his friend being kidnapped more so than he is, you know, the end of the world. Like, he has a sense of duty, but he has not become this like master of his domain yet, and I think that's
that's interesting too. Yeah, and we haven't had that in so long.
No, absolutely.
Good pick, horror pick. I also picked a horror book for my favorite book of the week, Silver Coin Number 6 by Josh Williamson and Michael Walsh. Walsh draws, colors, and letters the book. This is a series that's a series of one-shots by different writers. Walsh draws every issue about a cursed object, which is a coin. In this case, there's a bit of an 80s vibe, maybe an early 90s vibe when it comes to a mall arcade and a young boy who... he just can't win at this fighter game that actually has Spawn in it.
This issue rules. Yeah, it has Spawn.
Yeah, me too.
That really surprised me too.
But,
And the return of a ton of character designs from
previous issues. Yeah, we get a really good like kind of recap. I think even we actually get a preview in a way too. I think there was a piece of art from like Vegas or something, which is the next story.
There's also, I mean, like one of those fighters is like the serial killer from
exactly
too.
Yeah, but just it's such a clever idea to take this cursed coin and then make it into an arcade situation because the kid uses the coin
to be
really good at the game, but of course it doesn't turn out so well for him by the end. And then there's a really good backup with a crow that has the coin as well, and he's sort of like hoarding this coin where these Boy Scouts might steal it. But yeah, so overall, like it's a great, this is the first issue to the second story arc. So it's a great like way to like recap how we got here, but it stands alone and it's just really entertaining how they use this coin. But
it's some wild violence in this one, like some really crazy action. And yeah, I love how this book, it feels of a piece with every issue, but it also reinvents itself.
Yeah, it gets me excited for this next batch of stories from different writers.
Yeah.
What was your favorite book of the week?
My favorite book of the week was The Human Target, number 1 by Tom King and Greg Smallwood. I was looking forward to reading this, but this issue exceeded my expectations. I've been kind of back and forth on some of Tom King's stuff over the years, and it's not really, I don't even know if it's so much that it's just, maybe it's not my vibe, but this one, I will actually go to bat for quite a bit of his Batman run, which I know is, you know, sometimes not the most popular opinion, but I enjoyed Mr. Miracle. This, I don't know if enjoyed is the correct word. I got a lot out of Mr. Miracle. Miracle's very heavy. This book is exactly what I hoped it would be. Just this kind of hard-boiled, spy story, like a detective story, really, where a man is trying to solve his own murder before it happens. And we get this great opening where we kind of get a little preview of the next, 12 days of Christopher Chance, or the last 12 days of Christopher Chance's life. This is a character that I really like. And so it's always fun to see like a return to it. And it feels like it exists in both this darker, more grounded world, but also a world where the Justice League International is still a thing. I love that it's the super buddies, essentially. And I also love that it is a black label book that is censoring the swear words.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if that's I don't mean that to sound like a fuddy-duddy, but it feels of a piece with Justice League International in a weird way. So I don't know, there's something very kind of sitcom-y about the language the bad language that's used in here and how it's still covered up, but we're still exploring these like darker themes and in a very colorful world.
So
Smallwood's artwork is exceptional.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because it's not like Tom King's against swearing. He has swearing in his other DC Black Label books.
Sure. Yeah, no, it has to be a specific
totally
choice.
Yeah, like a stylistic one. I was lucky enough to talk to Tom King in a roundtable on Monday. The interview's on AIPT if you want to read it. But yeah, like this book, he talks about how his son has been nagging him to write a story with Ice in it, which is a character I'm not even that familiar with.
Yeah. Ice is in part two, or in issue two.
She's apparently a huge part. He said in an earlier interview with Screen Rant, like, it's a very sexy book. There's a lot of sex scenes, I guess. And Ice, I think, is going to hook up with Chance.
Sort of the
maybe, I don't know. But yeah, it is cool too. Like, I love the Mad Men vibe of it. The character drinking the liquor, the way they're in suits, just the look of it. Smallwood's like really going for like that retro feel. And
this issue made me want a scotch.
You know what? I'm not surprised you loved it too, because it's got this James Bondy feel. Like, he's so cool. He's a cool
guy. It really does.
This is how we want men to be. Cool dudes in suits, right?
Well, and not problematic. Yes. Like, let's talk about James Bond was a little more respectful, and maybe it would be Christopher Chance.
There you go. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Or he'd be Ethan Hunt. I don't know.
And it's drawing on an era of DC that I don't think a lot of people are super familiar with the comic Human Target. I know there was a TV show only a few years ago, too, but...
Yeah, and Chance was actually a recurring character on Arrow.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He would pop up. I think he's only in like two or three episodes, but I was very happy because he's another one of those kind of like niche characters that I get really excited about when someone dusts him off.
Nice. Yeah, it's a really good book. Moving on.
Yeah, I can't. I'm really excited.
What I'm excited for is top books for next week, our most anticipated comic out next week. I mean, it's kind of weird. I'm just bowled over excited about our next segment always. So much so that I can't enjoy any of this show. I'm honestly just miserable the whole time waiting for the next segment.
You're so mad. You're just like, I just want to know what the next thing is.
So Nathan, what are you looking forward to most out next week?
I'm really looking forward to Regarding the Matter of Oswald's Body by Christopher Cantwell and Luca Casalinguida. This is my catnip, dude. Like, if you like, I love spy stuff, but then this gets into conspiracy theories, cover up about the JFK assassination. And then like this group of characters are investigating the theory that Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't actually buried in Rose Hill. Mm. And it's like this kind of they're described as a ragtag group of useful idiots, a wannabe cowboy from Wisconsin, a Buddy Holly idolizing former car thief, a world-weary civil rights activist ready for revolution, and a failed G-man who still acts the part. And they are charged with cleaning up the crime of the century and dealing with the matter of Oswald's body. We talked to Chris a little bit about this about a month ago, I suppose, whenever he was on the show. And he gave us a couple little hints about some of the weird avenues he was going into and the research he was doing for this. And so I'm a conspiracy nut who believes maybe only 30% of the conspiracies I read, but I love the going down the different rabbit holes. I think this is going to be a really
fun I was just talk. Listening to NPR, and there was this scientist on who totally believed in Bigfoot. And she was saying how, like, they found hair in the UK that they couldn't get. Do you believe in Bigfoot? Okay. Yeah. And like she said, like, they found this hair and they couldn't get the DNA match for any animal. And it has to be Bigfoot. And I was like, wow, I guess even.
Well, I don't know if it has to
that's
be.
True. Maybe it's just a weird dog. We don't know. But anyway, yeah, no, I'm really excited for this one, too.
Just what kind of dogs are these? Side tangent. When I went to Ireland with my family a few years ago, I really enjoyed this little bit where every time we would pass a field of sheep, I would ask my sister what kind of dogs are those. And it was very funny for her for the first day.
How old were you then?
Oh, this was like 2 years ago.
I pictured you like 10 years old.
Old enough to not be an asshole about it. That's funny.
Did you do the Ring of Kerry? Nice.
Yes. That was the best. Yeah.
I thought it was better than that was a nice trip. The Dingle Peninsula, but that's just me. If you like the Dingle Peninsula over the Ring of Kerry, you're an idiot. Moving on.
I thought you were going to say you'd love our next segment.
I haven't told you my favorite book or most anticipated book out next week. Which is Venom, number one, by Al Ewing and Ram V and Brian Hitch. This is a much-anticipated book, in part because Venom has always been a horror boy, horror goopy boy, and now...
Yeah, Scoopy. Scary, spooky, goopy boy.
Say that 10 times fast.
It's hard to say.
And now we have probably the top-tier horror comics writers right now working today, joining forces on a book about... Eddie Brock's now King in Black, and Dylan Brock, who is using the Venom symbiote for protection, but after the end of this issue, who knows?
Yeah.
And so we've got these two conflicting stories where we've got Dylan, you know, taking on this Venom role for the first time, fighting crime. He's not supposed to be, but he's fighting crime here and there on the streets. And then we've got Eddie, who's a freaking god, who's like trying to be like the symbiote police of the universe because he kind of feels bad for Null, like destroying entire planets on his way to Earth. So,
trying to make up for this cool
blend of horror where it's street level and then this just like mind bending stuff. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see what people think of the first issue.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet. I'll be reading it after we record today, and I'll have a review up for it on amptcomics.com.
Check it, review.
I started to do it, and then I lost steam. I think there's no one putting coal in my fire today.
Is that a metaphor? In our next segment, judging by the cover, Junior, we're going to talk about our favorite cover art out next week. I picked Alien number 8 by a guy you might know, RB Silva. Awesome artist. This cover is really neat, in part because, a little bit of a spoiler, aliens are now on Earth. I think they are on Earth now. Or they're not, they haven't like spread out and taken over or anything. They just got there. But this cover has got them like a couple aliens on the foreground in these like weeds. Go to aptcomics.com to see the full cover. But.
Yeah, very, very Lost World Jurassic.
Yeah, and but yet behind this alien in the background are like these giant planetoids, with this cool blowout of light from one of the planetoids. It's all red, very foreboding color, but it frames the alien's head so well. It's just so pretty. R.B. Silva's art is always so clean and just so pleasing to the eye. And this is playing with space. And
I love the reflection.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I love the reflection on its on the like the xenomorph's like carapace. Like I just think that's a really cool touch. Like this is
colors by Arseniga. Eric, I think, is his first name. It's not on the listing here, but just it just creates this sense of awe, and it makes you feel like aliens aren't just these simple creatures that chase you down. They're also these like this is like a bigger world that Philip Kennedy Johnson is exploring. What was your favorite
absolutely? My favorite cover art for next week is Harley Quinn, the animated series, the Eat, Bang, Kill Tour, number 3. And it's the variant cover by Megan Hetrick. I just think this is such a sweet cover. It's very opposed to your cover.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true. They are in a field. It's Harley and Ivy are sitting together cloud gazing. And Harley is pointing at a cloud and the little word bubbles are just drawings. Like she's describing a little wizard unicorn turtle.
With stars on its back.
And Ivy. Yeah. With stars on its back and Ivy's, just,
she's like, puzzled
by it, but isn't saying anything, but she's thinking it. That's she's true. Not going to like, she's not going to like boo her. I just think it's so sweet. I don't know. This cover really made me smile. Ivy's a very supportive girlfriend, and the pose is just very sweet. I love the colors through here. It's very picturesque, very like My Little Pony like energy in a way. We just watched my girlfriend and I were watching the toys that made us, and it's so interesting seeing like how a very similar color palette kind of seeped its way into a lot of my favorite things as a kid. But yeah, I don't know. This cover just made me really happy. So
the play of light on their bodies through the trees is really nice too. And the clouds are just insanely cool.
Absolutely. I also want a t-shirt that says Green-Thumbed Goddess.
That's awesome. Check out that cover on aptcomics.com on this post. But wait, don't do that. Because Ron V's joining us to talk about Swamp Thing. The Swamp Thing, specifically. We dig into a little bit of the future, but also what he's going for with the series and also the brotherhood between Levi and Jacob.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Enjoy. So on with us is Rom V. Rom, thank you so much for being on the APT Comics podcast.
A pleasure.
First of all, congrats on Swamp Thing. Nathan couldn't be here, but man, he has reviewed every issue and given every... He actually said to me the other day, like, is it wrong that I want to give every issue a 10? And I'm like, let me ask Rom if that's wrong.
No, it's definitely not wrong to want to give every issue a 10. I approve of this message.
First of all, congratulations on a second season of Swamp Thing coming down the pike.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Now, this was originally announced as a 10-issue series. Did you always have more stories in the tank if it were to get renewed? Or did you expand your original plans when you got confirmation of more issues?
When we originally pitched this, we pitched it as seasons with the ability to kind of close off the narrative at the end of a season if we thought that was the best thing to do. But I think given the response to the book, given the success of the book, all around critically and popularly, I think it made sense to extend the story to a season two. And in my discussions with the editors, we decided to do that. So it wasn't much of a pivot for me to then plan things that way.
That's good to hear. You recently mentioned on Twitter that you're drawn to writing characters who give us a unique window onto humanity. People, why are we the way that we are? So what is it about Swamp Thing and Levi in particular that lends itself to telling those kinds of stories?
Well, I mean, they're two different aspects, really. So I'll tackle the Swamp Thing aspect first.
Sure.
I think superheroes in general, they work really well as lenses. And Swamp Thing as a lens of the outwardly horrific and yet the internally trying to be human, trying to be beautiful in some way. I think that has always been this kind of wonderful, melancholy, tragic lens to look at humanity through. And then the idea of something that is older than us, looking at us, almost in a parental sense, if you will. That has also been a common theme, and of course, all the great runs that came before have used that to varying degrees to a lot of success. As for Levi, I think when I pitched this series, my thesis really as part of my pitch was that we had seen so many stories around Alec Holland. I almost felt like Swamp Thing stories had become rooted in Alec's personal drama, and part of me almost wanted to say that, but I want to see more stories about Swamp Thing rather than returning sort of to the Abigail Arcane, Anton Arcane drama, if you will. So I said, it's important still to have this human tether and to have that drama and to have that character focus, but let's bring in a character who's more representative of the world as it is today, who is from a part of the world that is concerned with things like climate change, things like the future of the planet, things like who represents humanity. So all of those things seem to be more poignant, more relevant concerns for 2021. And I imagine that made sense to then bring in a character who demonstrated all of that rather than trying to tell the stories of someone who's been around since 50s, 60s.
With the climate summit this week, I mean, it just feels like Swamp Thing's more important than ever to be able to tell stories in this sort of vein of the superheroes. Because, you know, you don't have Superman going, huh, temperature's getting warmer out there.
Yeah. And I think, I don't think you'll find Swamp Thing doing that in one of my stories either, but I think there really is something to be said about this kind of underlying concern of like how far away from our natural point of existence are we going to go before we realize that, okay, we've gone too far, and there has to be some sort of a return to innocence, if you will.
Right.
And so I think that is certainly a struggle that you will see played out. I don't want to give away spoilers for issue 10, but I think issue 10, if issue 1 to 10 laid out this kind of manifesto of new Swamp Thing, new concerns, Levi, the kind of story that we're going to tell, I think issue 10 will lay out the manifesto of like, okay, what is our central philosophical conflict that we're going to explore in season 2.
The issue that came out this week was phenomenal. I loved how you went back in time and sort of showed us the origins of Swamp Thing in a way I've never even thought about. Themes of familial duty and colonialism have been an especially strong component of the last few issues in particular. Was that part of your original concept of the series, or is that something that has evolved as the book continued?
It was part of the concept when we pitched it, but these are all forms of exploitation. If you think about it, we exploit people's ties with each other to manipulate them into doing what we want them to do. I mean, rather politicians, governments, political movements do that a lot. Industry and money will exploit lands and resources and entire communities of people to get them to do whatever is profitable for company. And so I think that has been a common theme, and that will continue to be a common theme, is how do, through the lens of Swamp Thing, how do we look at this kind of exploitation that we perpetuate on ourselves? And what a tragedy it is then for the trees to look at us and go like, why are you doing this to yourselves?
Right, you know? Right.
And I think that was always a fascination that I had. I didn't want to present it as the trees are fighting back. Rather, the trees are standing as they have always stood and shaking their heads at watching us do this to ourselves, if you will. I think that is more Swamp Thing to me than that sort of reactionary agency given to the green, if you will.
Mm. I recently saw this GIF. It was sort of guessing at where the continents would be in 250 million years with the tectonic shifts.
Sure.
And everybody was like, it's so sad to think that humans won't be around. And it's like, well, Well, there'll still be life on Earth. It's just we may not be here in this form we're in right now, because we will have to evolve.
You know, the world will go on. We'll move on. Mm-hmm. So really, these stories are about human beings and what they do to each other, rather than will the world be like, the world will move on. It'll adapt. It'll change. It'll be fine. It's been doing that since it was all volcanoes and brimstone. You know, the question is, where do we see our place in it? Where do we see what is our role to be played, and how long will we play it?
You've got science fiction writers saying we're going to be nanite clouds floating around, no longer organic, but I don't know, maybe that's the Swamp Thing story for the future. Mike Perkins and Mike Spicer have been doing some phenomenal work. What is it like working with them on the project?
Yeah, I mean, Mike's one of these kind of walking encyclopedias of DC Comics, really. So it's always entertaining working with Mike. His instinct for storytelling with these characters is not only comes from his ability to draw them, but also comes from a like vast reservoir of knowledge that he has about these characters. So it makes my job a lot easier.
Mm.
But equally, I think Mike's one of those rare collaborators who is okay with me going in, going like, I have this very specific idea of wanting to do this on the page. And I understand that can be galling sometimes to someone whose, you know, job it is to put that stuff on the page. But Mike's brilliant and lovely in terms of collaborating. And hopefully I've demonstrated an equal openness in terms of him coming to me with story ideas and saying, we should do this. Yes. Okay, let's do it. And Mike Spicer has been brilliant as well. We, you know, Mike and I really, at the beginning, we were the ones who were like, okay, we need to get Spicer on this, because look at his work with, you know, we'd seen his work with Daniel Warren Johnson before.
And, yeah, Spader Ray Bill was insane.
Yeah. and so Mike Perkins was like, okay, that's the kind of coloring we need on this book. And it's great to see all of that come together. And Aditya also joined the team. So, I mean, we're pretty in sync.
You're stacked.
Yeah.
All stars. Yeah, I was going to ask, Aditya Bhittikar, lettering feels like it's getting pushed even more into an artistic realm in the last 5 or 10 years. I see more, you know, with the word balloon design and what people are doing with letters. What is it like working with Aditya on this, as far as like getting the right inflection or having Swamp Thing's voice feel like it's rumbling out of him?
Yeah, I think, you know, Aditya is certainly one of those letterers that when we first started collaborating, there was certainly the sense of, no, I don't believe lettering should be invisible. It should add to the art. It shouldn't take away from it. It shouldn't be obtrusive, but it should add to the experience of reading a book. And Aditya is certainly of that mindset. And I've found myself to be of that mindset when I'm collaborating with him on books. So when it came to Swamp Thing, we've done quite a few crazy things here and there, you know, drop letters without balloons into the art. The title placements, every time we do one of those title spreads in the issues, Aditya and I spend some time going like, okay, how do we make this look cool?
That's awesome.
And yeah, and transitions. I think this is the first time we've quite focused on the idea of a human being transitioning to Swamp Thing each time. And so that transition being reflected in the lettering, when is it Levi's narration boxes? When is it Swamp Thing's narration boxes? I think those are all interesting choices, and Aditya does great each time.
Levi's brother Jacob makes an appearance in the issue this week, and he's been teased from the start, really.
Yeah.
What makes the brotherhood between Levi and Jacob so important to the story?
I mean, I think this goes back to, you know, it's not trees versus humans. Mm. It's humans versus humans, right? And really the fate of the world rests on our ability to drive ourselves in the right direction. And Jacob and Levi kind of present two potential viewpoints on what we could do, should do. There was a contagion within the green mentioned. And we've been toying with this idea of the green being collective consciousness of the world, if you will. And so Jacob kind of presents a human idea of how we should be treating ourselves, if you will. And maybe we don't deserve to treat ourselves kindly. Maybe we don't deserve to treat ourselves well. After all, the self-praise that we've given, look at where we've ended up, you know? And so I think that philosophical argument is put forth by Jacob, and it is definitely a brother of the philosophical argument of, no, we need to be patient. We will find a way. We will do well. We will clean up our act, if you will.
Do you have any siblings?
I have an older sister, but I have when I was younger, I was very close to a cousin brother of mine, and we used to fight all the time. So there's definitely some Freudian working out going on there.
Have him read this and see what he thinks later on. I know that a lot of people were huge fans, including me, of the Future State Swamp Thing story, which, of course, revealed this apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic kind of future. Mm-hmm. Is that something that we're still working towards? I know some of the Future State books sort of dabbled a little bit. Some of them didn't. Some of them kind of just let it go.
That has always been this idea of this far, far future thing. And
yeah,
with the run, I'm not working towards it as much as the run is always in context to what we have seen in Future State.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it in some ways, in Future State, Swamp Thing says, that wasn't me. I wasn't the one who destroyed the world.
Right.
Now you've got this idea of two brothers fighting for ownership of the green. So yeah, I think there are links and Easter eggs that way, but nothing that is too directly pointing at that. And I don't imagine that will be the case going forward either. I'm not a fan of working towards an ending, if you will.
Gotcha. Yeah, creating an ending and then working backwards or something like that.
Yeah.
So obviously we're really excited for this second season. Is there anything you want to tease or any foreboding words of warning for the readers on what's ahead?
Yeah, we're gonna commit to this idea of ideas battling it out within, you know, human consciousness. And if you think about the ideas that have truly changed the world, and if you think about parliaments as ideas that have truly changed the world, there might be time for new parliaments. There might be time for certainly horrific interpretations of humanity's role in the greater scheme of things, and how Swamp Thing will contend with all of those things. There will be, as has been the case in season one, there will be appearances from characters throughout the DCU. I've really enjoyed kind of reinterpreting some of them through the lens of the aesthetic of this book, if you will.
You've got quite a year. You've got Venom coming out, Swamp Thing season two is on the way. You're becoming like the horror king of comics. Is that off base to call you that?
No, I don't think of myself as a horror writer particularly.
Sure.
I don't know how these things catch on, but like everyone keeps telling me like, oh man, These Savage Shores was an amazing horror book. I'm like, it's not a horror book.
Right.
There's nothing horrific about it. I mean, yeah. Blue and Green were certainly horror,
mm-hmm.
but I've done science fiction. I've done sword and sorcery. I mean, my JLD run in the Justice League book certainly has not had any horror components to it. So I think people see me doing one thing and they want me to do more of it. And then at some point I'll do another thing and hopefully people want me to do more of that at some point. So we'll see. I don't limit myself to a genre. Yeah,
it's almost like fans want to pigeonhole people. I know like for decades people were telling Stephen King he was only horror. And I think only in the last 10 or 20 years he was like, it's not just horror. There's romance, there's action, there's fantasy.
Yeah, but also like people like watch Shawshank Redemption and sing praises each time. And
right.
That's not horror.
Right.
And that's amazing. And Stephen King wrote that. So I think there's this need to like bracket someone, because I think it becomes an easy conversational point. Oh yeah, Ram V does good horror.
Right.
That's not all I do.
Yeah, it's like people are like, oh, it's a shame that actor was typecast. Well, they were typecast because you're typecasting them. You're like, you're saying that it's so simple that you have to put it in this little tiny box that can be so easily defined.
Yeah, but I mean, I also, I think, I don't worry about that too much. That will change with time. At some point, I'll lose interest and I'll just go, nope, not doing any more horror stuff. You know, Layla Starr was not horror, so.
Right.
And people enjoyed that.
Usually on the show, we ask what you were reading in comics. I know you're super busy and probably have almost no time, but what are you reading right now?
I am reading Monsters right now, which is, you know, I purchased and kept that on my shelf for far too long and I haven't caught up on it, so I'm doing that. Scott Snyder sent me all of his new creator-owned stuff that's coming out, and I have not read that, and I've just started reading that now, so sorry, Scott, but
I'm just last week to talk about all three titles.
Right. So good. I'm not that far behind that. No. I will catch up on those. I mean, I think my reading tastes certainly have now because of how much I'm doing, kind of mutated into people will send me stuff and I will read it. Rather than, you know, I'm going and finding things that I particularly want to read. My tastes, I think, have kind of veered more towards manga in recent years, more towards some of the European stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, I forgot you even have Three Worlds going on too, right? How's that going?
I mean, it's going well, but I did like one document for Jonathan, and that's it. It's not an ongoing thing in any way.
Gotcha.
Obviously, there's a window to do more stuff at some point, but I imagine if and when that's the case, you know, Jonathan will be in touch. But I haven't done more than, you know, type out 4 pages of a Word document
right at the beginning.
I can't. I mean, I'm kind of swamped right now with stuff that I'm doing. Yeah.
Kind of swamped. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, even with the Swamp Thing Suicide Squad tie-in crossover kind of going on, that was so fun too.
Yeah.
Might we see any more crossovers or event caliber stories going on with Swamp Thing in 2022?
I mean, there will certainly be characters that I'm pulling in, whether they're existing in other books at that moment or not, will be a topic of discussion with the editors. But I've certainly got ideas for characters that I want to pull in. I think this is one of the great joys of comics, taking like completely unrelated, unexpected characters from various corners of this amazing narrative melting pot, and then just going like, yeah, I bet you never thought of putting these two together. And there's so many people who are like, oh, why are we seeing Suicide Squad and Swamp Thing? How does that go together? And then once the issues actually came out, they were like, oh, this is not what I expected, and this is kind of cool. So I kind of enjoy doing that.
It's always fun too to like bring back a character that no one remembers existed ever, and then there's like this to like enliven them with a new
deep
kind of
cuts.
Yeah,
no, I think part of the joy of doing this is also that kind of reinterpretation of this is what you thought the character was, but you could do this with it. You know, yeah.
I think that's probably one of the joys of writing these characters too, right? Like thinking of ways to do it that no one even thought of or didn't think was possible.
Oh yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Mic drop. Absolutely.
I've got like whole pitches of stuff like that sitting with editors, but this is such a you know, creative decision versus editorial decision thing, where creatively I'm like, I want to take this character no one's heard of for 60 years. I want to reinvent it. And then I completely understand where just come back and go, but Ron, no one's heard of this character for 60 years. Why do you want to write this one?
Must be done.
It'll forever be the creative drive that remains unfulfilled, I imagine.
I bet, yeah. Well, Ron, we are so excited to read Swamp Thing Season 2, your Venom series, and what's more to come. Thank you so much for being on the Amputee Comics podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.